accession number 19102, Reel 4.
Back to Reel 4.
The rice that we had in these sacks were mouldy, but we brushed the mould off and we ate it to sustain ourselves. We were then taken to Taiwan and we were put on the Hakkasan Maru. Now the Hakkasan Maru was one of the biggest ships at that time of day that the Japanese had, and it was one of their crack liners. We were battened down in a hold, and then we lost another friend. His name was Ernie Fulbrook, and he came from London. We buried him at sea, and Benny, I think, retained all his personal belongings and eventually returned them to his mother in London. When we arrived in Japan, we were put through a cleansing unit. All our clothes was taken off us, and we were made to go through all this water and sprays and what have you. And I suppose it was to cleanse us and clean us up. Benny and myself then parted, and I thought, oh, there goes Benny. I'm going this way, he's going that. I wonder, will we ever meet again? Anyway, I went off to Osaka to a camp called Samari. We were put into a camp with the American chaps, and there was Dutch also there. The Americans apparently had been there for quite a number of years from the time the war started, because they were horrible sods. I hate to say this, but they were. They were, as we were informed, were convicts off of Wake Island and were the first of the Americans to be captured by the Japanese. And they were really terrible people. Anyway, we were put into work in the factories building ships. And we were treated, well, I don't know how to say, not too bad. We did long hours of work, of course. I can't just remember what food we had now, but it wasn't a great lot, and it wasn't much. And then shortly after we'd been there, we heard about the American bombers coming over and bombing Tokyo, and we heard various bits of news of this, that and the other about what was happening. And then one night there was a hell of a raid on Osaka, and the bombs that dropped were firebombs, not high explosive, but firebombs, and quite a number of them fell in the camp that we were in. One fell just outside of the hut that I was in, and I suppose that the Japanese were then thinking, well, the best thing to do is to move us. Whilst we were in that camp, we experienced the cold weather, the winter weather and that, snow, ice and what have you, and we used to hang our shirts out of the window at night so that they would freeze the lice and the fleas and what have you out of your clothing. We used to hang our clothes out, let them freeze, shake them in the mornings, and then put them on.
Did that work?
Well, no sooner you got rid of some of your fleece, you got more. It seemed to be we seem to be alive with lice. I don't know why. We used to try and keep the place, you know, you wouldn't see any food or anything laying around. But the lice was, whether it was a lice area, no, I don't know, but we were lousy. Eventually, with all this bombing going on, they took us to a camp called Nayowets. And that was on the northwest coast, just north of Tokyo. There, we were unloading salt boats. And working in the factories, building bits and pieces for shipping. And that's how it continued. The Japanese in charge of that camp were really very, very nasty. On one occasion, I was walking across from the cookhouse to the place where we slept, and a Japanese guard stopped me, hit me, and then took me to the guard room, and I stood there for two whole hours holding a piece of bamboo above my head, and every time a Japanese guard came by, he slapped my face. We had an English officer in this camp, and he came up and spoke to me and said, "What have you been doing to be in this position?" I said, "As you know, I couldn't tell you. I don't know what I'd done wrong. All I was doing was walking from the cookhouse back to the billet." "Oh," he said, and off he walked. I thought, well, that was a lot of good. Oh, about 10 minutes or so later, an American officer came along. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And I told him what had happened. And he went into the guard room. And he came out. He said, "Come on. You can come with me." And that American officer actually got me out quite a spot of bother. I don't know why I got into this position, but anyway, I was quite relieved to be able to get into the hut again. Then, a few weeks after that, we heard of the news. A Japanese boy, could only be 7 or 8 years old, he came up to me and said, "Senso Owari." And I turned around and said to the other chaps, "He's just said the war has finished." Senso is war, Owari is finish in Japanese. We had picked up quite a number of words and sayings of the Japanese language. I never bothered about it too much because I just couldn't be bothered to learn the Japanese language. Anyway, we were told that the war had then finished, and they took us. We were actually out at work when they told us at the factory, and they marched us back, and the Japanese never said any more to us. They left us to do what we wanted. We were put on parade and discipline came back again to a sort of, you know, you're on parade again, so you're back in the British Army. I think there was about 200 Englishmen in this camp, but previous to that, they were mostly Australians. The Japanese left us alone. They still were guarding the camp, and they left us alone, and two or three of us were pulled out of the ranks and given a piece of bamboo to parade outside the camp, and we were then known as policemen. Well, policemen. We certainly walked around with the Japanese, but if we heard any noise, we would take the Japanese away from where we heard the noise, and the Australians and the Americans went over the fence and out into the town. The American planes dropped a lot of goodies, as we called it. Food, clothing. And of course, we were felt much, much better after a few days to think that we were free. And on one occasion, I can remember, there was so much stuff dropped by the Americans that we put quite a lot of it into our pockets, in the clothing that had been dropped. And we went out into the village of Naoets and gave all this stuff to the American women and children.
The American?
The Japanese women and children. And I often wonder, why did we do that? I can't quite understand our thoughts on this, but anyway, that's what we did. Then,
presumably because they were short.
Oh, they were starving like we were. Yes, of course, they were very, short of food. Anyway, eventually they paraded us, took us down to the station, put us on the train, and we were put on the planes at Yokohama and flown from there to Okinawa. From Okinawa, we were flown to Manila. We were put on the Empress of Australia, and we sailed home to England. We called in at Ceylon, which is now known as Sri Lanka, then Port Tufik, and then we came in at Liverpool. And then, of course, we were sent home. We settled down. We certainly enjoyed ourselves when I got home. We got drunk on a few occasions, I think, if I can remember rightly. We settled down, we all got married. And I have been back to Bangkok, up the river Kwai on the railway on two occasions, which I found it very much changed. I can't say how I felt. I don't seem to have any feelings and thoughts on this. I visited the two cemeteries of Chiang Kai and Kanchanaburi, and I saw the stones of my friends Razor Smith and Roland Green. And the visits there I don't know what to say, whether I felt relieved of going back and seeing these of my friends. But it was quite an experience to go back. This year, I've also been back to Japan. And the reconciliation organization, they call it Agape. Now, where they got the word Agape from and what it represents, I haven't got a clue. But they certainly, they put us on the plane and took us to Japan, first class. We visited Osaka, which has greatly changed. We went to Kyoto, to Kobe, and then we eventually went up to Tokyo. In Tokyo, we went to the cemetery and had a short service. And after the service, I was introduced to a Japanese soldier who was actually a prisoner of war of the British in Indochina, which is now known as Vietnam. And he took me back to Naoets. We arrived there and a lot of people from Naoets were there to greet us off the train. I stayed the night at this soldier's home and was treated extremely well, and a lot of his friends came and we had a meal all together and they treated me like a lord. I can't find any fault with the Japanese people of Naoets, and they have formed a society called the Australian Naoets Association, and they have been in touch and had Australians and Americans back to Naoets with this association, but nobody from England. And I was the only Englishman that have been back in all this time. I found out about the officers and men that were guarding us in this particular camp. There was 8 of them executed for war crimes because the Australians lost a terrific amount of men in this camp, in this particular camp. The camp has been demolished and is now a peace park. And they have memorial stones for the Australians. And they have statues of peace symbols. The people in Naoets took me to various places and showed me around, and we actually visited the factory that I worked in. It has completely changed after all these years. And we went up into the boardroom and had a discussion in Japanese and one thing or another, and I thanked them for accepting me back there and looking after me. And then we dispersed, we went to a hotel, had a meal, and then we got back on the train, we came back to Tokyo. From Tokyo, we went to Nagasaki. We sailed on a boat through what they call the 100 Island area and went to Hirado. Now, the people of Hirado are very much known to the English people, apparently. They love the British for the simple reason that, and I think it was the 1600s, a chappie by the name of Adams sailed into Hirado, and that was the first Englishman to do trade with the Japanese. He eventually settled there and helped them build Nagasaki up. After we left Hirado, we went back to Nagasaki. And we went to what they call the epicenter, where the bomb actually dropped. And when you stand there and look around, and you see all the buildings that have gone up, you can only but admire the Japanese people to the way they have rebuilt their homes, their workplaces, and everything around you is all modern. The cars are flying around. There's trains, there's trams. And the people of Nagasaki really must be admired for the way they have rebuilt the area that was devastated by the bomb. The bomb, no doubt, shortened the length of the war. A lot of people were killed by it. But again, this is one of the tragedies of war. And then when we left Nagasaki, we came back to Osaka, and then, of course, we flew home to England. I could no doubt go on and tell you a lot more little tales of what happened. But I feel now that I've done enough talking for you to listen to this and wonder what sort of chappy I am. Is there anything else you would like me to say?
If I can ask you about this place, Somari. Was it called Somari or Samari?
Somari Camp.
How do you spell it?
T-S-M-U-R-I-A.
T-S-U-M. U-M.
Yes. Somari. M-A-R-I-A.
In what way were these American POWs so obnoxious?
Oh, they were horrible people. They were mostly convicts. And if they could pinch anything off you, they would do so. I remember one occasion, we had a horse brought into the camp to be eaten. It died, and it was brought into the camp for us to eat. Can't remember what it tasted like, but I know I had some of it, because anything you could eat, you would eat. And I can remember the Americans, one of them had, I don't know how he got hold of it, but he got hold of a bone of this horse, and he was breaking it up between two stones, and he was eating what he was breaking of the bone. And another American came up and pinched a piece of it, and they went really berserk. And they had a real fight over this bone. So, you know, they were funny people. Lots of incidents that happened in the camp. You can't remember them all, but certain things stayed in your mind. And you have to really think what really happened. On one occasion there, I remember, we went out one morning to the factory. We had an earth tremor, and the factory absolutely swayed. And we all rushed out and went out, and we were warned to get out in the open in case the factory collapsed. But the factory stayed up. It was built so that it could stand the earth tremors. And we were actually on, it was built out into the sea a bit. And it was actually built on water. So it was a factory that could stand the tremors of the earthquakes.
You said at this other camp that you were at this Nayarit's camp.
Yes.
You were unloading salt boats. What did you mean by that?
Well, we worked on the docks on occasions. The it was a dock area, you see. We used to go and work, and the factory was further down the road. And we used to unload boats at the docks. And on one occasion there, we loaded it with iron and unloaded the old iron, you know, so it would be smelted down. That stuff was being brought in and stuff was going out. And that, oh, I can't remember now what we did.
And what did you do in the factory? What kind of factory was this?
Oh, we were electric welding there. Electric welding parts of boats and ships and bits and pieces, welding the metals together to... they assembled them and then took them away, loaded them onto the boats and took them to, I suppose, other shipbuilding areas where they needed these bits and pieces that we were building.
Did you do the work properly?
Well, no, of course not. We used to weld them, and then, you know, you'd put your welding on and sort of weld a hole. And, well, we did what we could, which we thought would sabotage any of the bits and pieces that we were building.
Was that discovered?
On one or two occasions. Oh, yes, we used to get... We had one or two occasions here when we were belted around for not doing the job properly. You expected that. So you had to be extremely careful that if ever you did anything wrong, that you didn't get caught.
Have you had any long-term effects from your experiences?
Touch wood, no.
What are your feelings now about having been a Japanese POW?
Well, you look upon life now, I think, every time you wake up, you think to yourself, oh, another day's grace, another bonus. When we returned home, we were informed that if we lived for 25 years, we would be lucky. So I consider myself a very extremely lucky man.
Do you feel inclined to be reconciled to the Japanese?
Well, I think after all this time, you cannot hate the Japanese people of today because they know nothing about it. The wartime period has been suppressed by the Japanese governments over the years. And the only people that I really hate, if you use the word hate, are the few Japanese that I was with on the railway and in Japan itself, and my generation, but the future generations from then, well, you can't hate them. You will never forget what happened, whatever you try and do and think. But hate cannot go on, can it?
No.
Not after all these years.